All right, get ready for a wild one. We are diving deep into this really crazy case from Iowa. Benjamin V. Lindner Aviation.
Oh, yeah, I know this one.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
It's we've got all the court documents and some legal analysis to break down. And trust me, it gets juicy.
All right.
So imagine finding a small fortune, like $18,000 in cash.
Wow.
Just tucked away in the wing of an airplane.
Sounds like a movie.
Right. But this isn't hypothetical.
Oh.
This happened back in 1992.
Really?
Yeah. And it gets even crazier because it wasn't just about, like, who got to keep the money.
Right.
This case sparked a legal battle.
Oh, wow.
That went all the way to the Iowa Supreme Court.
No way.
And it all boils down to how we define found property.
So that's what makes this case so fascinating. It's like a masterclass in how, like, legal definitions shape real-world outcomes.
Totally.
Huh.
So picture this.
Yeah.
It's 1992. We've got Heath Benjamin, an aviation inspector.
Okay.
He's doing a routine check of a repossessed airplane, opens a panel in the wing.
Yeah.
And boom.
What?
There's $18,000 in old $20 bills.
Wow. Talk about a find.
Carefully wrapped and stashed inside.
But this is not a simple case of finders peepers.
No, not even close.
Ooh.
We've got three parties all laying claim to this cash.
Yeah.
Benjamin, the guy who found it, Lindner Aviation, the company servicing the plane, and State Central Bank, which owned the plane.
Okay, so who wins this?
Yeah, who wins?
Legal battle.
Tug of war.
Well, the bank actually walked away with the money.
Really?
But getting there, that's the really interesting part. To understand why, we need to break down some key legal terms. Lost, mislaid, and abandoned property.
Okay.
Each category has different legal implications for who gets to claim ownership.
Yeah, before we did this deep dive, I thought lost kind of just like covered everything.
Wow, yeah.
Clearly I was wrong.
Yeah.
What are the nuances here? Let's start with lost property.
Okay, so lost property is pretty straightforward. It's something that is unintentionally parted with.
Okay.
So think about like a dropped wallet on the street.
Yeah.
That's classic lost property.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So then what about mislaid? How is that different?
So mislaid property, on the other hand, is intentionally placed somewhere, but then forgotten.
Okay.
Like if you leave your phone at a restaurant,
right,
you put it down with the intention of picking it back up, but then—
But you just space it.
You totally forget about it.
Yeah.
So the key here is that placement was intentional.
Okay. So it all hinges on intent.
Totally.
That makes sense. Yeah. What about abandoned property?
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's when someone just decides they don't want it anymore.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Abandoned property is something the owner intentionally relinquished any claim to.
Okay.
Basically decided it was trash.
Mm.
Has no intention of ever getting it back.
Okay. So we've got these definitions laid out.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's apply them to the case.
Okay. Let's do it.
Where did the Iowa Supreme Court land on the $18,000 in the airplane wing?
They decided that it was mislaid property.
Really?
And their reasoning was someone intentionally hid that money there.
Oh.
Carefully wrapped.
Wow.
Tucked away.
So they just forgot about it.
They probably just forgot all about it.
So they applied like the out of sight, out of mind principle to $18,000.
Exactly.
I can't imagine forgetting about that.
I know, it's hard to believe, but I guess it happens.
But legally,
yeah,
the court's reasoning makes sense.
Okay.
Under the law, the owner of the premises where the mislaid property is found, they get a hold on to it.
Okay.
Just in case the true owner comes knocking.
So in this case, that means the bank
gets
to keep the money.
As the airplane's owner.
What a bummer for the inspector.
It was definitely a disappointment for him, but there's a little twist to the story.
Okay.
There's a dissenting opinion in the case where one justice argued that the money was more likely abandoned. Oh, tell me about that dissenting opinion.
Yeah.
Why did he think it was abandoned?
Well, his logic was, who forgets about $18,000?
Yeah.
He thought Benjamin, the inspector, should have gotten to keep it.
Okay.
Especially since he followed all the proper reporting procedures.
Right.
For found property.
Mm-hmm.
He argued that the majority opinion was kind of stretching the definition of mislaid to fit this specific case.
Okay, so we've got this legal battle, a pile of cash, a divided court.
Uh-huh.
This is already more complex than I thought.
Yeah, definitely.
But wait, there's something else I remember about this case.
Yeah.
Involving a specific Iowa statute, right?
That's right.
Something about lost property.
You got, there's another layer to this that we got to peel back.
Okay, let's dig into that in part two. This is getting good.
All right. Okay. So this other layer we got to look at is Iowa's lost property statute.
Okay.
Chapter 644.
Mm-hmm.
It lays out a specific procedure for finders of lost property. So if you find something, you're supposed to report it.
Mm-hmm.
Try to find the owner.
Okay.
And if no one claims it after a certain amount of time, you get to keep it.
So if the inspector had found something, like a lost watch, like something that clearly fell out of someone's pocket.
Right.
He could have potentially gotten to keep that under the statute, right?
Potentially, yes.
Okay.
But there's a catch.
Oh.
The statute only applies to property that is classified as lost under common law.
Okay.
It doesn't replace those common law definitions we talked about.
Yeah.
Lost, mislaid, abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
It exists alongside them.
Okay.
So think of it this way.
Yeah.
The statute creates a specific path for resolving disputes.
Okay.
Over lost property while still acknowledging the broader framework of common law.
Ah, okay.
Oh.
So even though there's a statute in place.
Yeah.
The court still had to rely on those common law definitions
exactly.
to determine if it even applied
right.
in this case.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this statute is adding like a layer of clarity and process.
Yeah.
But it doesn't rewrite the entire rule book on found property.
Exactly. It's like the statute's a shortcut.
Okay.
A more defined path.
Yeah.
But you can only take that shortcut if you meet the specific criteria laid out in common law.
That makes sense. So how did the statute factor into the court's decision in the Benjamin case?
Okay, so the court ultimately decided that the statute didn't apply to the cash in the wing.
Okay.
Because remember, they had already classified the money as mislaid, not lost.
Right.
And the statute only kicks in if the property is considered lost under common law.
So the statute was basically like a moot point in this case.
Yeah, pretty much.
The court's classification of the money as mislaid meant they didn't even need to consider the procedures outlined in the statute.
Exactly.
It's such a fascinating interplay between statutory law and common law principles.
It really is. This case highlights how statutes and common law can sometimes clash.
Yeah, and judges have to figure out how to reconcile them.
Okay, so we've got a dissenting opinion arguing the money was abandoned.
Yeah.
We've got this whole debate about statutes and common law.
Right.
There's a lot for the court to consider.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What were the main arguments the majority opinion used to justify giving the money to the bank?
So they focused on two key things.
Okay.
First, they pointed to the way the money was found. Carefully wrapped.
Yeah.
Hidden behind panels in the wing.
Yeah.
To them, this suggested it was intentionally concealed, not casually lost.
So the manner in which the money was found, the fact that it was like deliberately hidden played a big role in the court's thinking. It wasn't just lying out in the open.
Right. And their second point focused on protecting the rights of property owners.
Okay.
They basically said, look, if we start saying that anything found on someone's property is up for grabs, that creates a lot of uncertainty and potential for unfairness.
They were thinking about the bigger picture.
Not just this one case. But the implications for property rights in general.
Exactly. The majority opinion emphasized the idea that mislaid property should be entrusted to the owner of the premises.
Okay.
Because it's assumed that the true owner might eventually remember where they left it.
Right.
And come looking for it.
Like when you leave your phone at a restaurant.
Yeah.
They hold on to it for you.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Yeah.
The court is basically saying that giving the property to the finder could actually make it harder for the true owner to be reunited with their belongings.
Okay.
And in a way, that's a more equitable outcome.
Yeah.
Because it prioritizes the rights of the person who likely has the strongest claim to the property in the first place.
Right. It was probably someone's hard-earned cash that they stashed away.
Exactly.
And the court wanted to make sure that if they ever came looking for it.
Yeah.
There was a chance of getting it back.
Right. But it raises an interesting question. What if someone had come forward claiming to be the rightful owner of that cash?
Right. What kind of proof would they have needed?
Right.
Like what kind of evidence would have held up in court?
Right.
It makes you think about how they'd even begin to prove that they stashed thousands of dollars in an airplane wing decades ago.
Totally. Imagine trying to convince a court that you just forgot about $18,000.
Right.
Definitely be a challenge.
Yeah. No one ever came forward to claim the money.
Nope.
But this hypothetical scenario is really intriguing.
Definitely. Let's explore that further in part 3.
So we were talking about what would happen if someone came forward claiming to be the rightful owner of that cash.
Right.
What kind of evidence would have held up in court?
Well, the court documents don't really address that.
Oh, right.
Because no one ever came forward
right.
to claim the money.
Yeah.
It raises some interesting questions, though.
Yeah, like what kind of proof would be convincing? Would a faded deposit slip from like decades ago be enough?
Right.
Or would they need a witness who could like corroborate their story?
I mean, how do you even prove that?
I imagine it'd be tough to prove ownership.
For sure.
After all these years.
Yeah, it highlights this kind of ironic tension in the law.
Oh.
The court recognized that the true owner might never come forward.
Right.
But their potential claim still, like, trumped everyone else's.
It's almost like the law operates on a principle of hope.
Right.
Like, maybe someday the rightful owner will just magically appear.
Exactly.
And reclaim their long-lost cash.
Right.
But realistically.
Yeah.
The odds of that happening after all this time are pretty slim.
It does make you wonder about the practicality of it all. But
from
a legal standpoint, it's about upholding this fundamental principle.
Right, yeah.
Property rights.
Mm.
The court isn't just trying to resolve this one dispute.
Right.
They're setting a precedent that will impact future cases.
So they're thinking about the long game.
Yeah.
How this decision will shape the legal landscape for found property cases.
Exactly.
Down the road. Mm-hmm. It's not just about who gets the $18,000.
Right.
It's about establishing clear rules that can be applied consistently.
This case has implications for all sorts of scenarios.
Oh, yeah.
Not just airplane wings.
Okay.
What if you find, like, a valuable antique
hidden
in the walls of a house you just bought?
Right.
Or a forgotten safe deposit box belonging to a deceased relative?
Mm-hmm.
The Benjamin case provides a framework for analyzing those situations as well.
This case is making me think differently about found property.
Yeah, I bet.
It's not just about luck.
Uh-huh.
It's about navigating this whole web of legal principles and considerations.
Totally. Speaking of different scenarios, one question that keeps popping into my head is, what if the money had been found in a rental car?
Oh, that's interesting.
Who would get it then?
Yeah.
The person who rented the car?
Yeah.
The rental company?
Right.
Or would the bank still have a claim since they technically own the vehicle?
That's a great question. It shows how this case opens up this whole Pandora's box of what ifs that gets to the heart of property rights.
For sure. A rental car situation would definitely add another layer of complexity because you have this contractual relationship between the renter and the rental company, which could impact the outcome.
So we might have to like factor in lease agreements, rental contracts, all sorts of other legal documents to figure out who has the strongest claim.
Right. It highlights how important it is to consider all the relevant facts and legal relationships when dealing with found property.
Right.
There's rarely a simple answer.
This whole conversation has really underscored how this seemingly simple question of who gets to keep the money spirals into some pretty complex legal analysis.
Mm-hmm. Totally. But before we wrap up, I want to play devil's advocate for a moment.
Okay.
What if instead of reporting the money,
mm-hmm.
the inspector had just pocketed the cash?
Oh.
What kind of legal trouble could he have gotten into?
That's where things could have gotten really messy for him.
Totally. Failing to report found property, especially a significant sum, like $18,000, could potentially lead to charges of theft or conversion.
Oh, wow.
Which is basically unlawfully taking someone else's property.
So even though he was the one who found the money, it wasn't his to keep.
Exactly.
The law requires
a
certain level of honesty and good faith when it comes to dealing with found property.
Totally.
Finders keepers doesn't really cut it in a legal context.
No.
Especially when you're talking about large sums of money.
There are established legal procedures in place for a reason.
Right.
And ethical considerations come into play as well.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Trying to like secretly keep a large sum of money is a recipe for disaster.
Exactly.
This deep dive has been a wild ride.
I know, right?
We've gone from forgotten cash in airplane wings to hypothetical scenarios involving rental cars, ethical dilemmas.
It's been a great reminder that the law isn't always black and white.
Right.
Sometimes it's about carefully weighing competing interests interpreting statutes and precedents,
yeah.
and ultimately trying to reach a fair and just outcome.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
The Benjamin case is really a testament to
yeah.
the complexities and nuances of property law.
It really sparked so many intriguing questions.
For sure.
And what if scenarios.
Totally.
I'm sure our listeners will be thinking about it long after this deep dive is over.
I hope so. It's cases like these
yeah.
that make exploring the law so fascinating.
Well, on that note, it's time to wrap up this deep dive.
Right.
Thanks to our expert for taking us on this journey.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Through the fascinating world of found property and legal precedents.
Always enjoy a good legal case.
And to our listeners, remember, if you ever stumble upon a hidden stash of cash, don't let finders keepers be your guiding principle.
Right.
Consult an attorney.
Exactly.
Make sure you're following the proper legal procedures.
Yes.
Until next time.